Thank you for joining me for this week's episode of the Sun on the Strip podcast presented by Greenspun Media Group. I'm Brock Radke, entertainment writer and columnist for the Las Vegas Sun, here every Wednesday to give you an update on all the entertainment news straight from the world-famous Las Vegas Strip, plus a compelling conversation with a performer or personality from this dynamic Vegas showbiz landscape. Thanks again. Let's get right into the Strip news because things are happening. Moves are being made. After last week's update from the governor that COVID restrictions are loosening up, starting this week, capacity limits in showrooms and theaters, as well as other venues, have gone up to 35% or 100 people, whichever is less. And that is making a difference for a few shows so far. The ones that have been operating for months with 50-person max audiences like Piff the Magic Dragon, Tape Face, different comedy rooms, and some female reviews. Most of those are switching things up to accommodate these larger groups, and a couple shows at Luxor are reopening this week. Carrot Top and Fantasy are returning to the Luxor Theater this weekend. Both of those shows reopened in November, then had to close again by Thanksgiving when things tightened up. Now they're coming back, and that's really exciting to see. We might see some other small room shows returning to action in the coming weeks, but most likely any production or live entertainment event that can operate at these reduced capacities, they're going to be waiting until March 15th, when, if everything goes as planned and virus numbers don't spike in Southern Nevada, the Strip is set to return to pre-pause levels, the way things were in the summer and the fall, which is 50% of venue capacity and gatherings of 250 people. You may have seen a story in the Las Vegas Sun already this week that the Vegas Golden Knights and T-Mobile Arena have submitted plans to get some fans back into the fortress for hockey games by March 1st, as permitted by these updated restrictions. And that's a super exciting development, too. That could pave the way for some bigger entertainment events to possibly come back before summer arrives. Also announced this week, Criss Angel and Franco Dragone are teaming up to create a new theatrical experience called Mr. Smiles and Molly. Very little is known about this one so far. The news release only said it'll open this year and described it as interactive, immersive euphoria, a surreal pre-nightclub experience, and a bold fusion between the world of electronic music and theater. There's no indication where the show will happen yet either, but I'm hoping to get some more details very soon. Criss Angel is still getting ready to reopen his Mind Freak show at Planet Hollywood, and Franco Dragone continues his Vegas comeback. He's developing his Rise project and other big Vegas entertainment stuff. Whatever this new project is, it sounds like it's going to be something new and different and probably branch out a bit into the world of nightlife. And speaking of nightlife, Hakkasan Group announced this week that it will reopen three venues next month: Omnia at Caesar's Palace and Wet Republic at MGM Grand on March 5th and Liquid at Aria on March 12th. The big news here is reopening the Terrace at Omnia. So it's not the whole club, the mega club. It's just the outdoor lounge overlooking the Strip, which is still a very cool spot. But Omnia hasn't been open at all for almost an entire year, so that was a big, big update. Wet Republic and Liquid were both open last summer, operating as pool lounge venues and not the regular crazy day club party thing. And that's how they'll reopen next month, too. And those aren't the only day clubs coming back in this subdued manner soon. Encore Beach Club has announced a March 5th reopening date as well. And just a little flashback to big news from last week, stuff that came out right after the Wednesday episode of this podcast. Virgin Las Vegas has set an opening date for March 25th. The new resort taking over the former Hard Rock Hotel space has been nearly finished with construction for a while now and was originally going to open in November, then pushed back to January, and pushed again, is now focused on March, and I'm betting this one sticks. I'm actually working on a sneak peek tour of the property, so I can tell you all about it before it opens, and you should stay tuned to the Las Vegas Sun and Las Vegas Weekly Magazine to keep up with me at Virgin. And on that same day last week, Mandalay Bay announced it is renaming its event center as Michelob Ultra Arena, thanks to a new deal with Anheuser-Busch, and it was reported that the Drew, the former Fontainebleau Resort project on the north end of the Strip, has been acquired by a new ownership group with new plans to finish this long-delayed casino hotel project. You can go to LasVegasSun.com and click on Entertainment to get caught up on all these stories. This week, my Sun on the Strip interview is with one of the hosts of Magic Mike Live. Really cool, innovative show that opened at the old Hard Rock Hotel in 2017 and was supposed to reopen in a new home on the Strip at the Sahara in 2020. Obviously, that was postponed, but the Sahara is finishing up construction on a custom theater for the show right now, and it's set to open at last at the end of March. And when it does, Chelsea Phillips-Reed will be there walking us through the experience and making us laugh. She's an incredibly funny entertainer and a very well-rounded performer, too, as you're about to find out. She's been doing her thing in Vegas for a while now and launched a couple of new personal projects during the pandemic, including a crazy good podcast that you need to check out. In fact, if you like this podcast, Sun on the Strip, and you enjoy listening to these interviews with Vegas entertainers, you're going to love the Side Hustle podcast with Chelsea and Sarah Lowe. They are much more funny than me. Here's this week's chat with Chelsea Phillips-Reed. I had to go the entirety of 2020 without one of my favorite shows. And I'm not talking about Magic Mike Live. I'm talking about the Instagram behind the scenes show I was watching by following you and your castmate, Linda. One of the funniest shows in Vegas, in my opinion, the Instagram.
Oh my gosh. Well, thank you so much, because all I can say is I missed it as well, because it was just an endless source of fun and entertainment. And there have been so many times I've like looked back at those videos and I'm like, oh, remember that? Those simple days. We were so innocent.
You guys seem like everybody on that show seems like you're having so much fun backstage and running around Vegas, and it was very entertaining.
It is. I say this all the time. I don't know how they did it, but somehow our creative team managed to find like the coolest group of people. Like, I feel like I've won the lottery just to get to hang out there, because we have so much fun. Everybody is just like a smart, talented, cool person that you genuinely want to hang out with. So, I mean, all of this year has been sad that we're not working, but just, you know, it really does feel like grief of just missing that camaraderie and that family that we have backstage.
Yeah. Yeah. You were a part of Magic Mike Live from the very beginning, right?
In Vegas? Yeah. Yeah, that's right. OG cast.
How did that role come about for you? How did that first initial connection get made?
Oh my gosh. Well, I really say it's like a fairy tale, and Channing Tatum is my fairy godmother. So I was living and working in Las Vegas already, and, you know, was kind of at this point where I was like, I don't really know what I want to do. I had worked as a singer for a really long time, but like in my heart, I always wanted to do comedy. And I feel like that was like a note I had gotten over the years. Like, no, this song is not supposed to be funny. 'Cause I'd be like, you know? And so I just saw a casting notice on vegasauditions.com, and it didn't say anything about a female comedian, a female host. It literally was just for Magic Mike Live, like male dancers. But I don't know why, and this is where it gets magical, I was like, oh, I'm going to read it. Like, I'm going to read that casting notice. So I clicked on it and I read all about it, all about like what they're looking for. And at the very bottom, it said, also casting a female comedian to host the show. Think Amy Schumer, think all these different awesome female comics. And so I was like, oh, I'm going to apply. And then in my mind, I was like, I'm never going to get this job, but I'm still going to like submit all my pictures and my reel and all this stuff. So I submitted it, and then I got an appointment. And so they had asked us to write like a 5-minute set about like what women want, what your experience is like if you go to see a male review. So I performed it for my husband and my dogs, and they loved it. And I was like, well, this is it. I'm a comedian now. So again, I think I went in there with like such low expectations of like, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just going to go and just, this all seems really fun. So I went in and I felt like so nervous that I was like kind of like vibrating a little bit. And then I saw my friend Sarah, which foreshadowing comes later. And I do a podcast with Sarah. I saw my friend Sarah and we were in the bathroom and I was like, Sarah, I'm so nervous. And she was like, yeah, I know. It's like really, it's a lot of pressure. And I was like, I just read this article about power posing. I was like, do you want to do a power pose? So Sarah Lowe and I stood in the bathroom of Fernadair Studios, like with our hands on our hips and then like crossed arms and we like pointed our fingers. And I really feel like that was the boost I needed. Yeah. So then I went in, I performed my set. Sorry, this is like the longest story ever. I'm trying to keep it going. There's layers like an onion.
You got time.
Oh, good. This is a 9-hour podcast. Yeah. So then I went in, I met the creative team that was there. So it was Allison Falk, our choreographer and co-director, Teresa Espinoza and Luke Broderick, all of our choreographers and also the choreographers for the movie franchise. So they were there and they are just like the loveliest, most genuine people. Like at first I was like, oh no, this might be a cult. Like they might be converting me because everyone was so nice. I was like, oh God, here comes the Kool-Aid. Like it's going to be like that. But they were just so lovely and so welcoming. And so I performed my set for them. I thought it went great. And I left and I was like, well, that was like a wonderful experience, but there's no way I got that job. And then a couple weeks later, the casting director from New York called me and said, so Mr. Channing Tatum, and I just will always remember that. She was like, Mr. Channing Tatum has some questions for you and was hoping that you could like film yourself answering these questions and just get it back to me like tomorrow. I need it right away. And again, I told you, Brock, I'm like not tech savvy. So my poor husband, I like roped him into like taping me and I was really stressed. And I was like, you got to count me in 3, 2, 1. So I filmed this thing in my house. And I was like, hello, Channing Tatum. And I just did it. And so then I sent it in. I didn't hear anything. And again, I had that like overwhelming, like, oh, well, I didn't get it, but wasn't that fun? And then a couple weeks later, again, they called me from New York and the casting assistant. And he said, so Channing can't wait to meet you. And he's going to fly you to LA on Friday. And I go, oh my. And the casting director goes, I know. So they flew me to LA and then I had this interview with Channing who, you know, not only is he like talented and gorgeous, he is the most genuinely like kind, loving person. So from like the first moment, I think he was like, hey, I'm a hugger. And I was like, I'm a kisser. So yeah. So then I had this interview with him, which again, we just talked for a really long time about everything. And I didn't feel like I got it. I was just kind of like, wow, what a cool guy. I'm going to talk about this for a long time. And then that night they called me and said that I got the job. And yeah, ever since then, I literally feel like the luckiest person in the world.
It's just a special show, apparently.
Yeah, it really is.
The thing that I love most about the show is the way that you and Linda and your fellow co-host kind of steal the show. So there's this like, you know, really talented women kind of taking over this male review. And I think that's what probably sets it apart from the other shows in Vegas, or at least did at the very start of it, is this, you know, very strong female perspective, and the audience gets that as well too, right? Like the women in the audience, there's something more to just, this is a bunch of sexy guys on stage there.
Right. Well, and that's, I couldn't agree more. That's like what makes the show so special. And I think that's what Channing always had envisioned, that this is a show created for women and not just to experience the like spectacle of these incredible dancers, but to actually like feel seen and feel powerful and feel important. And I think that's what's so awesome is like, not only do these guys dance and sing and do awesome stuff, but they like come around and like make connections with people, which I love being a part of. And from the very beginning, Chan talked about like my role as the MC. I'm kind of like the big sister to the audience, you know, because people come in and they don't know what to expect, or they might feel self-conscious or weird. And then they have me, who's kind of like, oh my God, there's no wrong way to experience this. If you want to laugh, great. If you want to like scream, awesome. If you want to like sit silently and just be like, ah, you can do that. And then I'm experiencing all that too, because I am like the OG Magic Mike Live fan, because that whole process of being in rehearsals, I was in the audience watching it like, what the hell? Like, it just was so overwhelming. Like, I didn't stop like sweating for like a month, where I was just like, it's too much. It's too much.
You've done a lot of different things in your career. Apparently, I didn't know this. I was reading a little bit. Part of getting your start in show business had to do with Dolly Parton. What is the deal with that? How did that happen?
Oh my gosh. So I know Channing, I said, you're my fairy godmother, but I feel like actually it's Dolly Parton as well. I have many. So I grew up in a small town in East Tennessee. I'm from a town called Oak Ridge. And I was like that weird kid that from birth loved to sing, to dance, to sleep in tap shoes in case somebody needed like a midnight entertainment, like cabaret. And so, you know, there was like no choice. Like I always say, my mom was like the opposite of a stage mom, because she was like, please stop, just stop with the singing. So I started working when I was really, really young. So when I was 11, I got cast. So Dolly Parton, who was like the patron saint of, I mean, America, but at that time of East Tennessee, because she had started Dollywood. She was announcing her Imagination Library project, which is so awesome because her own father was illiterate. So she has this dream of like sharing her love of reading with children all over the country and now the world. So she was announcing this program where at the time she was sending every child born in Sevier County a book a month until they turned 5. So she decided to do a show with kids. So I got to do her Christmas show with Dolly when I was a little girl. So that was like my first experience in a, like a professional show, which I'm like, way to ruin everything.
Strong debut.
Yeah. Because you work with someone, again, I kind of like Channing, where it's like Dolly not only is like so talented, you meet her and you just love her because she loves you. She knew everybody's name. Like from the first minute I met her, I'll never forget. Cause I remember like my mom was like, okay, Dolly's coming to rehearsals today. And my mom was like, don't be weird. And I was like, okay, you know, like my mom's classic advice. And then the first thing she came right up to me, she went, you are so pretty. And I went, you are too. And she, you know, she is like love personified.
Growing up in entertainment and trying to find your spot, I guess, find your lane, did you settle on any particular thing early on, singing, dancing, comedy? How did you kind of take the route that you've taken?
Oh man, like a series of weird events. Yeah, I've kind of been asked things like this similarly in the past. And it's just, you know, I wasn't really sure what to do because I didn't really know how to do it. Because again, I'm from this like tiny town. There wasn't like drama classes at my high school or anything like that. So all I knew was that I wanted to perform and I wasn't sure how to do it. And growing up, we didn't have cable. So I would watch like PBS because we could get it on our rabbit ears. And I would watch the Lawrence Welk show that was like in repeats. And I was like, well, that's what I want to do. I want to like be on a variety show. I want to sing and dance and like be funny and do skits. So from that kind of idea, I really got started doing musical theater. So I started doing that. And then that kind of turned into these gigs of like working as a singer. So I worked on cruise ships for a long time singing. I did a couple tours. I worked for Sesame Street Live, so I worked in Asia with Sesame Street. And then I came to Vegas. And so that's kind of been my like journey here. Mm-hmm. So again, I worked a lot as a singer for a long time because that like paid the bills. But again, I always had this like secret hankering of like what I really want to do.
Yeah. What was the first gig in Vegas?
Oh gosh. So my first like long-term gig is I did Vegas the Show at Planet Hollywood. So I was a singer there. But along the way, I did a lot of other little gigs and things like that. So I did Vegas the Show for a long time. And then I left and I did 50 Shades, mm-hmm. the musical parody that was at Bally's. And then I went back to Vegas the Show and then I got Magic Mike.
Vegas the Show is like rite of passage, right? Like everybody's got to be in Vegas the Show, basically.
Totally. It's like college. Like you got to, yeah. Yeah. And you know, I was so lucky to book that show because that was one of the first things I saw when I came to Vegas. And again, I had this opportunity to like sing and dance. And then, you know, you're not impersonating characters, but you get to kind of embody them. So I got to be like Keely Smith and like these women that I really look up to. So I thought that was really awesome.
And you have expanded once again. You've been working on the Side Hustle podcast recently. Is this something that came out of the, you know, the pandemic era, or how did it happen?
Yeah, kind of. Well, again, a gift of the pandemic was suddenly having all the free time in the world. So again, my friend Sarah Lowe that I mentioned earlier, you know, incredible performer. She was the dance captain of Jersey Boys for years and years. She and I have been friends for a long time. So before COVID, those blissful days, she and I had had a conversation about like, God, we've done some weird stuff for money. Like, you know, over the years, no matter who you are in entertainment, whether you've like been on Broadway or acted on a TV show, like, at some point you've also worn a costume and like worked at a kid's birthday party or like had to hold a sign, you know, all these things, all these gigs that you do that like make you kind of like lose the will to live. But then it is like you have stories for the rest of your life. So she and I talked about it. And then, you know, again, we had this free time. So we were like, you know what, let's do it. Let's have this podcast about the weird, wacky, wonderful jobs that you have to work when you're trying to get the jobs you want. And then it's just been so great to have something to work on. And then also we get to talk to all of our friends mm-hmm. about these jobs because everyone's had them. And no matter who you are, like our guest last week was Rebecca Bloom, who was the star of Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, who's won like a Golden Globe and an Emmy. And she's like someone that you just think like, oh God, you've never been a cater waiter. Oh yes. Yeah. So that's the side hustle. And it's been really fun. And you know, I really hope everyone will give it a listen because, again, it's a lot of fun and it kind of gives you an escape.
It's awesome. It's such a great concept for a podcast, too, because it is so, and you guys are just like, you're just talking, you know, you just hang out with your friends and talking, like the kind of behind the scenes stuff that I try to get with people on this podcast. It's automatically built in. I think all you entertainers should have to do a podcast every couple of weeks.
It's required by law. Yeah. Yes.
It's a lot less work for me. I can just tweet that stuff out and it's all there.
We need it. We will do that for you, Brock. That's why we did this podcast. We're like, let's make things a little easier for him.
Let's make Brock expendable.
Yeah. Oh gosh.
What other projects or activities have kind of kept you busy, I guess, during this downtime?
Oh man. Well, like a lot of sadness, day drinking, like looking in the mirror and being like, hello, darkness, my old friend, you know, that kind of thing, like everybody. And then I actually started another business, which is unrelated to entertainment, but equally kind of funny and random. Another good friend of mine, who's a performer in Las Vegas, Christine Hedman, who is the lead singer at La Rev. You know, we've been friends for years and we kind of bonded because she's from Texas. I'm from Tennessee. So we're like Southern girls. She came to me and she was like, I've always had this idea of converting a horse trailer into a mobile bar. And she was like, would you like to do that with me? And again, this was like right before COVID. So, you know, you're like, yeah, why not? Let's do it. And so we purchased a 1986 horse trailer, totally gutted and renovated it. And now it is a mobile Prosecco bar. So, you know, again, not the right time to start a business. Pro tip, don't do it in the middle of a pandemic. But we did. And now that, you know, it's kind of turned out to be the perfect thing for this time with COVID because you're outdoors, you can be distant. So we've just now started to have some gigs with our truck, which is called Gone with the Wine.
Of course it is.
Yeah. So those are my two big quarantine projects.
That's a good one. I like that one a lot too.
Thanks.
Magic Mike Live is, as far as I know, supposed to reopen in March in a new venue at the Sahara. I'm sure you're excited about that, even though your excitement has been delayed. Very excited still. What do you think about getting the chance to perform in this freshly renovated, very iconic Vegas hotel in a brand new custom theater?
Oh my gosh. I mean, I know I am so excited. The cast is so excited. We have been like anticipating and awaiting this day so much to return to the show. And also now we're on the iconic strip and at like such an incredible hotel. You know, Sahara is like the stuff of legends, and it feels really, really exciting to be there. And then this, I mean, I've only seen like renderings and like pictures of what the venue is going to look like, but it looks absolutely like mind blowing. And what's so cool is now that the show has opened in London and Berlin and Australia, they've taken all like the best bits of those theaters and put it into this one in Vegas, because we're really like the flagship show. And so it's just, it's, I think it already like melted your brain before. And I think now it's just going to be completely like overload, because the venue is almost twice the size. There's like zip lines throughout. So like now we can have like hot men just flying through the air. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think it's going to be awesome.
I think it is too. And again, when the show opened in Vegas at the former Hard Rock Hotel, it was in a space that used to be a nightclub. And even though it was, it wasn't built for the show, it kind of felt like it was, like the venue was a big part of the show, and it kind of set the vibe in the right way. So to be able to like build a brand new space from scratch, perfect for the show, I'm really excited to see what that's going to be like.
Yeah, I am too. I can't wait. And there's like, they're building this big bar, like lounge. So before and after the show, you can hang out, have a drink, and kind of like experience like what that feels like to be in the venue. So I think that's really cool.
What else do you want to say to people that can't wait to see you and the rest of the cast of Magic Mike Live back on stage again
soon? What do I want to say? I want to say thank you for loving our show, and like how much that means to me. That, I mean, I get messages almost every day from fans of the show saying how much they miss us, saying that they miss me and Linda being stupid backstage. So all I can say is like, we're going to see you really soon, and it's going to be bigger and better and more exciting and incredible than ever. And yeah, we just can't wait. Can't wait to be back there.
Thanks again for listening. That's going to do it for this week's show. Thanks to Chelsea Phillips Reed for taking time to talk with me. She's the best. You can go find her podcast at thesidehustle.live, and you can go to magicmikelivelasvegas.com and get your tickets to Magic Mike Live right now. They're on sale starting startup date of March 26th. You're going to need to see that show if you haven't seen it before, or even if you have, it's going to be all new at the Sahara. If you want to find some past episodes of The Sun on the Strip, go to lasvegassun.com/podcasts, or you can listen and subscribe at Apple Podcasts. Thanks again. I'll see you next week. Take care.